Hi, my name is Megan.
Megan comes to us with a concern about her roommate.
Well, my theory is that he might be a psychopath. He has zero empathy. He likes to trip me on the stairs.
How long have you lived together?
Maybe 5 years now.
And have these signs been there since the beginning?
I mean, he's always been a, you know, poorly socially adapted creature. And, like, I have reason to suspect my own judgment.
In what way?
Like, I've dated a lot of terrible people who show some pathological qualities.
Are you afraid?
I mean, he is smaller than me, so... I mean, he's big for a cat. Oh, can you hear him in the background? He's meowing.
Megan, for a case like this, I think we'd have to make a house call.
Okay, I will endeavor to stay alive until then.
How do we figure out if Megan's cat, what's his name?
His name is Pushkin.
How do we figure out if Pushkin is a psychopath? We needed advice and knew just who to call.
Hey.
Thanks for taking our case, John Ronson.
Oh, no, that's my pleasure, because it's something I've thought about a lot.
John Ronson wrote the book The Psychopath Test. He also took a class on how to spot psychopaths, and he told us the key to answering Megan's question.
The checklist. It's called the PCLR. It's kind of the gold standard of psychopathy diagnosis.
This checklist, where does it come from? Who developed it?
Okay. So in the 1970s, 60s and 70s, there was a Canadian psychologist, a prison psychologist called Robert Hare. And he took it upon himself to find ways to identify psychopaths. And he devised the checklist.
A subject gets scored on 20 character traits. If they score high enough, the theory is that you have a psychopath on your hands or on your lap.
Like, it's interesting because basically what this checklist says is that if you really study the nuances of their behavior and their history, then you can kind of root them out.
And you need the checklist to root them out because psychopaths can be hiding right under your nose or your bed.
It's a kind of extreme personality type. So they're totally sane. Many of them are kind of high functioning and they run businesses and... You know, they'll be malevolent, but they'll be malevolent in the way that we've come to expect corporations are malevolent.
That we applaud. That we invest in.
Right. As opposed to, you know, killing people. But some of them do go out and kill people. And
that's why it's handy to have a checklist so that you can tell if someone or someone whose litter box you scoop is a psychopath. So John had lots of tales about meeting psychopaths, and one leapt out as particularly relevant to Pushkin's case.
Well, one time I went to Florida to interview Chainsaw Al Dunlap, the famous asset stripper from the 1990s.
Suspected corporate psychopath known for ruthless downsizing.
And now lives in this kind of giant mansion in Florida. And the mansion was filled with sculptures and paintings of predatory animals.
Which ones?
Lions, tigers, falcons. I want to say pumas.
What I love about that is, like, it feels to me like a mockumentary version of a psychopath.
Yeah, it was incredible. Honestly, they were, like, all over the place. In the pool house, down by the lake. It was his hobby. Sculptures of predatory animals was his hobby.
But this is not just a funny coincidence, John says. A predatory outlook is a common trait among psychopaths.
One of the most memorable lines in the Robert Hare sort of pamphlet on how to identify psychopaths is they see the world in terms of predators and prey, and it would be foolish not to exploit weaknesses in others.
You know who else sees the world in terms of predators and prey?
Cats.
Cats.
Yeah.
It's uncanny.
So I have been through the psychopath checklist from time to time, wondering how many of the items apply to cats. So should we think about these 20 points in terms of cats?
I think so.
Okay. Item one, glibness, superficial charm.
Check.
Check. grandiose.
So we had a plan. Give Pushkin the checklist. Megan, Pushkin's owner, had total confidence in us.
What's your plan to give a questionnaire to a cat?
We were working through the logistics, but I had my own reservations.
I tend to blunder into dangerous situations, you know, like neo-Nazi compounds. But with proper high-scoring psychopaths, I was definitely more wary than I usually am.
How so?
So always being in a public place.
Was I putting myself in danger by meeting Pushkin at his home? How many small rodents before me had made this very mistake? I needed to know more about Pushkin's potential to cause harm.
Yeah, this is Eva Weiblinger.
Could we introduce you as a cat psychologist?
I think so. And also rodent psychologist, but nobody ever asks about rodent behavior.
We had found a biologist who is interested in predators and prey, who also happens to write crime novels.
Yeah, more in the thriller direction.
So I relayed to Eva some of the more graphic concerns Megan put in my head.
I think he's just waiting till the day he gets hungry enough because I'm made of meat and he's going to trip me on the stairs and eat me.
Is this a fair concern?
If she dies, he would eat her.
For sure?
He would be the first, probably. If the owner of a dog dies, then dogs would wait patiently until their hunger is so great that they just have to eat something. But cats, the moment you die, they would probably start to nibble.
The moment you die?
Yeah. If they like fresh meat.
After the break, we put Pushkin to the test. By the way, according to our fact checker, Nicole, there's anecdotal evidence that your dog would also eat you the moment you die. Before we administer the checklist, I asked our cat psychologist, Eva, if she had any final advice on how to approach our subject.
Yes, if you meet a cat, don't stare at it. This is not really friendly. If you want to show that you understand at least one word of catish, then you squeeze your eyes and look away past the cat. Try it with big cats in the zoo. Some of them do it too, if they're not too far gone.
Speaking of too far gone, it was time to meet Pushkin.
Hi.
Hi, Megan. So he's home.
Yeah.
We were in the lion's den. Did you tell him we were coming?
No. Mm-mm.
He just walked away and now he's sitting with his back to us in the other room. Mm-hmm. So far, the subject was uncooperative. I didn't even get a chance to squeeze my eyes at him. So picture a gray long-haired cat, white nose.
Green eyes, little white feet. Like the fur on his hind legs is very, 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 very fluffy.
Fur pants.
Yeah.
This house is pretty cat-free. Like, Pushkin exists, but there's not, like, a lot of cat stuff.
That's probably true. I guess I feel like he considers all my stuff cat stuff, so...
It was time to do what we came to do. To find out whether Pushkin is or is not a psychopath. Should we sit down? There are 20 items on the psychopath checklist. We group them into 5 categories. If Pushkin hits most of them, we'll have our diagnosis. First up, Pushkin's past.
His child kittenhood?
Yeah, early behavior problems.
I got him as an adult, so I don't know much about it.
Well, I don't want to make assumptions, but Eva did say this.
Kittens, they're really destructive.
They're all delinquents.
They're destructive, yeah.
Okay, another warning sign. Is he a repeat offender?
If your cat was imprisoned and was then out on parole, it's your cat likely to reoffend.
Definitely.
Next category, romantic relationships. Promiscuous behavior is a red flag.
Do you know what? Sometimes when I walk around the neighborhood, I see cats that look like him.
He might have fathered many kittens.
I'm always curious.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're promiscuous.
I don't know what your budget is like, but we could go round up these cats in the neighborhood and we could find out.
Do a paternity test.
I have strong, strong suspicions that many of them will be related to him.
That's typical cat reproductive biology. no marital status. It's just we meet for sex and then bye.
We'll see what that lab work says when we get back those paternity tests. Next, let's look at Pushkin's goals. A warning sign is a parasitic lifestyle.
That's the definition of companion animal. They're social parasites.
I think that sounds just right.
Does he pull his weight around the house?
I don't know what he gets up to while I'm gone, but it definitely never results in there being dinner waiting when I get home.
I'll mark that down. Next, Pushkin's actions and behaviors.
If you have a cat that lashes out at you without obvious cause or reason while you pet it, that could be poor behavioral control.
Sometimes I'm not even petting him and he just like attacks me. Like he'll just see my arm there. I'll be reading. I'll be minding my own business. He'll just see my arm and he'll just like with all four claws.
And you're not doing anything to provoke him, right?
No reason.
That's also a classic psychopath move.
One thing that happens over and over again, and I'm sure that if Pushkin could talk, Pushkin would like agree with this, which is that they're really big victim blamers. They'll say, well, he shouldn't have looked at me like that. And it's his own fault.
Yeah, you know, like he would always like trip me when I was going to his food bowl. And it's like he would always like get all upset like it was my fault.
Okay, that's not a good sign. Does he ever act impulsively?
All the time.
So that sums up actions and behaviors.
I feel like that's the most solid category so far.
Yeah, I agree. So the last category is personality traits. Let's start with glibness and superficial charm.
He has superficial charm. I think he just also has some genuine charm, so I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, I do think this is a tricky one, and I asked John about it. How could you tell when you were with a psychopath that the charm was skin deep?
It's not just the charm being skin deep, it's all emotions being skin deep.
Mm.
I'll give you one example. I met this Haitian death squad leader who had started crying about how he was innocent. And I looked up at him and he was only pretending to cry. And Hare talks about how they don't have the same range of emotions that non-psychopaths have. And so they fake emotions, but you can tell that like, they're often just not as good at it as you think. And you get this kind of eerie sense that it's all a shell and there's nothing going on underneath.
That's creepy.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, it's hard to discern that in a cat.
Yeah.
Okay. What about cunning and manipulativeness?
Cunning, 100%. Manipulative, maybe even more than that.
Yeah, I mean, that's how cats became pets. They learned to manipulate humans to their own advantage.
For example, when he flops down on the floor and shows his belly, but you know what that he's like angling for something.
We have a nice word in Swiss German describing this behavior.
What's the word?
Flottiere. It means like flattering.
Flottiere?
You did a really great job.
I'm not German.
Okay, what about, does Pushkin have an inflated sense of self?
He definitely feels that his needs are the most important needs in this house.
Cats are the most important animals in the world.
Two cats.
Yeah.
Okay, so that settles that. He's ticking a lot of boxes in this category. So now we are at the last item on the checklist, and John says this is the big one.
I would say that, you know, lack of empathy, of all the 20 points on the checklist, lack of empathy is like the main one. When you take empathy out of the brain, you know, all this other stuff is almost like just goes along for the ride, you know? And I'll give you an example. I was interviewing this KGB spy and I thought, okay, I'll dust off my psychopath spotting skills. So I said to him, were you a bully at school? And he said, yes, I was a bully. I used to hide behind the tree with a bag full of bricks. And then I would jump out and I would hit people over the head with my bag of bricks.
You have to be kidding me.
That's what he said. So I said, how did you feel about it? And he said, I felt good. And I said, how do you feel about it now, looking back on it all these years later? And he said, I still good. And I said, so would you say that you're not the sort of person who feels empathy? And he said, when a dog of mine dies, I get very upset, but all the people I've hurt and killed, who cares?
I mean, I feel like that fits in this case, you know. when Pushkin is a very old cat, he will look back nostalgically, you know, remembering all the times he drew blood. Yeah.
I love how you heard that story and you're like doubling down on Pushkin.
Yeah.
I thought it might give you pause.
No. What's there to pause about? You can tell that there's not an iota of remorse in him anytime anything happens.
So, I mean, I feel like it's really, really, really super clear. Pushkin is a psychopath.
I mean, I can't say I'm shocked, but it does feel, I don't know. I do feel a sort of cold closing in feeling now that it's confirmed.
Oh my God, he just came in.
Just came back in the room. He's got that look on his face.
What are you gonna do?
Like, what can I do? Like, he's so snuggly.
Yeah, you're not alone either.
I would say 99% of the cat population has aspects of being a psychopath too.
That implies that there's a 1% that isn't though, which I don't believe.
Well, it also raises the question, why do we want these tiny little furry psychopaths in our house?
Because they are like otherworldly and grand in a way that most dogs aren't. We like the idea of this kind of dangerous creature in our houses.
They're like safe psychopaths, and we seem to be attracted to that.
Yeah, it's like reading psycho thrillers.
Yeah. When we watch Mindhunter on TV, that's us interacting safely with psychopaths. They're not going to come out the TV and kill us. I think that's it.
Like, what if the reason we like cats and let these little psychopaths sleep in our bed with us is because it gives us the same terrifying rush as a psycho thriller? What do you think? Is that a stretch?
Is it? I feel like there's a large overlap between people who like cats and people who like, you know, cozy murder mysteries. Right? There's very much a demographic for people who love to curl up with their cat and just settle down and read about a quiet British town where they drink lots of tea and every once in a while they find a body.
If you have a burning question you can't find an answer to, give us a ring. 833-RING-ELT. 833-RING-ELT.
This episode of Every Little Thing was produced by Phoebe Flanagan, Aaron Reese, Bradley Campbell, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. It was edited by Ian Chillog and Caitlin Kenny, scored by Dara Hirsch, So Wiley and Bobby Lord, mixed by Dara Hirsch and Enoch Kim. Every Little Thing is a Spotify original podcast. Don't forget to feed the cat. Goodbye.